Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
To the Bring Ruckus community that might be tapping in and listening to this conversation, I do just want to introduce James Gregson, who is the creative director of LEGO's internal agency. He's been on the internal agency team at LEGO since 2018 and leading as creative director since 2020, right?
Yes. What a couple of years it's been.
A wild ride. I can only imagine. Yes. And yeah, I'm really excited to just chat more about it and learn more about you and your perspective.
I would love to start by diving in to the internal agency side of things. I know those are words that everyone recognizes, but as someone who has done years on the agency side, external agencies that is, and then now has a leading role at such an incredible internal agency, I would love to just understand, do you have any advice for like founders or executives that are scaling companies and trying to decide between like, hey, is it time for us to build out an internal agency or should we continue with these external relationships? Like when is the right moment?
It's a good question. I don't know if I'm best suited to answer that with any strong foundation, right? Because I haven't started an internal agency, but I can tell you what value we can bring or what value an internal agency can bring compared to an external agency. And it's pretty clear, right? Certainly at large organizations, there is a clear trend of internal agencies and that they know a lot more of why than say I do. But I would say very simply is that the onboarding of an external agency takes time. The churn at an external agency is a real thing. And at an internal agency, you know, we pride ourselves specifically at LEGO as being the brand stewards, right? We know the brand better than anyone else because we are, you know, down the hall from marketing, so to speak, and we live it and breathe it every day. And while, yes, there are some wonderful external agency client relationships and partners that exist, there is a massive amount of efficiencies, both from a process standpoint and a cost standpoint, most importantly, with having it all under one roof. I think at the same time, there are some realities to competency gaps that you have within internal agencies. You know, and I think one of the most important things that we talk about is know what we know and know what we don't know. And, you know, make sure that we're bringing in the best of the best from an external agency standpoint to fill the gaps when we have an opportunity at our fingertips, right? And we've done that with some really interesting Latinx test campaigns that we've run. And that's, you know, in the Americas, partnering with a Latinx specialized advertising agency, just to make sure that we're hitting on all the important points.
Yeah, that totally makes sense, especially the point. I mean, I love tapping external resources, the bandwidth draining effect of onboarding a new agency or managing an agency can take so much time. And even if you're relying on external agencies, who internally is going to be dedicating all of those times to managing those relationships, right? Do you ever, so like when you're on an external agency, the client is, I mean, almost always you just do what the client says. How in an internal agency do you get to push back a little bit on the marketing teams that you're partnering with, or are they fundamentally your clients and you just
think? Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we all, as we say internally, right, we all have the same email address, right? We're all getting paid by the same company. You know, our paychecks all say the same name. So I think it's really important to set that expectation and to build a partnership where it is less subservient, right, and more supportive and strategic. You know, I think that's a really important piece to what we believe we can bring. Listen, from person to person, it's not always like that. You know, some people want us to do what they tell us to do. And, you know, there are reasons behind that. You know, like any internal or any relationship anywhere, you know, you pick and choose your battles. But the reality is, listen, we strive to be strategic business partners, you know, on the creative side and the strategic side of the fence. And that's what we like to try and bring.
For sure. And then obviously, LEGO is such an expansive company with so many, I mean, infinite product lines as far as it was from my perspective. Does that give you like the type of variety that you would have when you were agency side and working with lots of different clients? Or do you find that you're, you know, working on the same thing consistently as the brand steward?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, listen, I've worked at every type of external agency you can think of, startup, boutique, private, publicly owned, right? Globally publicly owned. So listen, I got a super, super broad, diverse, you know, experience from a client background standpoint in that agency experience. I think, listen, within Lego, we have a wide, diverse sort of variety of problems we're trying to solve. Now, at the same time, it is very much principles in most cases around either getting the attention of shoppers or, you know, business challenges like retaining customers or, you know, bringing in new audiences. So it isn't as broad as an external agency, but there still is a diverse sort of a variety of problems that we're looking to solve on a regular basis. It's not like the same challenge over and over again.
Definitely. In terms of, and that kind of brings me to my next question in terms of the challenges that you might have faced. So
yes. You've
been creative director of like one of the most enduring toy brands in the world during one of the craziest times any of us have seen in our lives, right? Yeah. What have you learned? How has the last 2 years been?
Man. Oh, goodness. Where to start? What have I learned? One, I'm wildly humbled to work, you know, in the course of the last 2 years, given what was happening around us, to work for a company that one was wildly successful and has been wildly successful has been amazing. Two, because of that success, but also because of the responsibility we feel we have in the face of children across the world and supporting and donating to various causes over the last 2 years has been fantastic. So foundationally, that is very important and has been a wonderful sort of backdrop in what has been, as we all know, a crazy last 2 years.
Not everybody can say either of those things, that you've worked for a company that's done well and that has actively done well for the world. So that's huge.
I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to harp on it because I think everyone's talked about it, but I think, you know, everyone that was in a leadership position, whether directly or indirectly, I think learned real quick how to lead if they were a good leader and where they probably needed to get better at because, you know, everybody needed support in one way, shape, or form, right? I used to use the example of my partner, my co-creative director and myself oversee a large creative department, but my direct reporting line's a little smaller. And, you know, so we had team meetings or regular catch-ups, you know, in the heat of COVID. And I used to say, you know, out of the 6, 7, 8 of us, you know, every single one of us had a different living situation, right? There isn't like a one size fits all, you know, it's everything from a single father to me having 3 kids under 4 at home to someone living by themselves, and, you know, someone living with their mom. One had a different living situation. There wasn't a one size fits all, right? So empathy, trust, all those good things. Obviously, again, with the foundational understanding that the business was doing really well, so we could really lean into that idea of trust and like if people need time or space, give it to them. So yeah, it was a wild time. I think also working for a brand that had a really interesting purpose in those last 2 years of, you know, someone similar to Netflix or YouTube where, you know, we were a core piece of people's lives for the last 2 years in a good sense, right? Whether it was binging Netflix or puzzles, you know, our sales really resulted positively because people needed entertainment. And thankfully, our product does that.
Absolutely. I love that. And I think we've been talking a lot about just how it's never been so important to take care of your people. Obviously, we're all going through such a global crisis together and experiencing it from such different points, but also still experiencing the same craziness. And as we have all kind of adapted to need more from our relationships, from our work environment, definitely it's become a really interesting shift in terms of like what makes a great leader, what makes a great company culture, and how do we connect with our people through these screens.
Yeah, it is a wild ride. You know, I, for one, I think, you know, people often ask, you know, how does working remotely affect, you know, creative output? And, you know, I'm on the fence and listen, there's hundreds of different theories on this one. You know, I really believe that it's a lot of like the employee profile you have. Do you have extroverts? Do you have introverts? You know, I tend to believe, you know, a lot of creatives, you know, spread the spectrum, but I think most tend to skew on the introvert side, at least from my experience. And working remotely is wonderful from that standpoint, right? I think there isn't pressure to speak up in a conference room. I mean, there's that awkward, like, who's going to go in a virtual conference? But, you know, I think there's a lot more time and space for introverts and for creatives to come up with ideas and, you know, work in a little bit less of a structured environment than, say, you know, an in-office corporate environment. At the same time, I think what we really miss is the onboarding of new people, you know, or the collaboration within a broader team, certainly like with new team members. That's really, really struggled. You know, we've worked with a couple external agency partners on a couple really exciting projects, and the growing pains that we had of not just being in a room for 2 days, I think we would have cut off 3 weeks from a process standpoint. Absolutely. If we could have just gotten into a room and just, you know, not burn the midnight oil, but like really cut through the BS.
Definitely. I feel like I'm kind of a hybrid, you know, creative, yes. A little bit of an extrovert, a little bit of an introvert, but I feel like it's easier to get the heads down, like just I am creating something time. But what I have not found a replacement for is like the interactive brainstorming sessions. Like, I feel like it's really hard via yes. Zoom to get in that space with people. And I could totally see how that makes a project take a lot longer.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true. I think we really focused and tested on like smaller team brainstorms. So, you know, our director writer style things. So, you know, really getting closer to, so it is much more of a partnership so that it's not so many voices in a virtual space. That's been really super helpful.
Definitely. One of the things that we talked a lot about last year as a community that is heavily rooted in growth marketers was the decline of the efficacy of ad spend, particularly yes. on social media. It has just been so interesting to see as someone who it has a marketing background or works closely with marketing. It's like mm-hmm. we've, you know, built entire business strategies on these PPC acquisition plans and yeah. you can press a button, put a little bit more money behind it and get all of these new people, and it's not working anymore. So how do you see this shift creating more space for creative and brand marketers moving forward?
Yeah, great question. And something that is very close, near and dear to my heart, given my sort of my background in social. Listen, there is always going to be a place for social in some way, shape or form. On behalf of brand communications or brand marketing, I think the world of it being 80%, 70% of your, you know, marketing budget, even if you're a D2C brand, I think is over. And, you know, I think you see a lot of D2C brands scrambling a little bit, but then also, you know, looking at things maybe a little bit differently, right? You know, the value of email, the value of your, you know, your owned ecosystem is so much more valuable than it ever was. I used to tease a colleague who worked at Facebook, now Meta, saying like, are we going to start seeing like Facebook-like campaigns again? Because that whole idea of building an audience and a community so that then you can actually appropriately target them is so much more valuable than it was a few years ago. You know, I'm all for platforms like TikTok. I think the creativity and the content on those platforms is amazing. From an advertising standpoint, you know, I think they will benefit because the likes of Meta, Facebook, Instagram, and others are struggling. You know, you saw the Snapchat's stock prices, I think up 40%, I believe, after earnings. And that's, I think, as a result of the main place being Facebook being hurt from a performance standpoint. So listen, it's a really interesting place. I really think brands will start leaning into what their own digital ecosystem and their own digital audiences look like and try and build out that audience space that way.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. When we were doing research to prepare for this conversation, we found a talk that you gave where you mentioned that social had become the dumping ground for all things marketing communication. Yes. I really yes. love that.
Yep.
And I mean, my question was like, what can brands do to create more of a genuine connection, more genuine communication with your audience? And it sounds like you were kind of speaking to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, listen, I'm a big advocate, you know, the world of social and brand communications, you know, at one time was flood your channels, right? Flood your channels with as much content, as much information and, you know, see what sticks and, you know, iterate and optimize. You know, I'm really looking forward to flipping that, right? And fewer, bigger, better, less is more, you know, whatever saying you want to try and lean into, because I think that's where you start cutting through. And, you know, regardless of your budgets, you know, I always, you know, look at what we're putting out on our social channels for a brand and say to myself, like, why as a fan, or more importantly, why is not a fan, would I care about this? What would this do? How does this push me closer down the funnel? You know, and not everything has that conversion-based objective, but, you know, it costs a lot of money. Had a lot of time to create really great brand storytelling. And, you know, I look to companies like Yeti, who do just a fabulous job of telling, like, the most beautifully told brand storytelling. Now, not everyone has Yeti budgets, but they're a really good example.
Oh, I love what you said about fewer, bigger, better. I think that's,
yes.
That's great.
Yes.
That's a great approach.
Yeah, that is the goal.
For sure. And then in terms of brand storytelling, so what are some of the most important questions that you think, if you are creative, and it's whether you are crafting a brand story from scratch, you know, like working with a new client, or attempting to create from within an existing brand story? I'm sure that you have to onboard creatives.
Yeah, no, great question. The fundamentals to advertising or storytelling are not that different. You know, I think attention spans are certainly shorter than they used to be, and distribution methods are certainly different. But at the same time, you know, a human truth is a human truth, right? Or an insight is an insight, right? And I think every good idea starts with that. And, you know, we've all felt it, whether you're in marketing, in creative, or in advertising or not, where you see something and you're like, yeah, that resonates with me. I think that's ultimately the most important component to brand storytelling. You know, a little bit along a different side of the spectrum that I always say is, like, why would a consumer care? Like, you know, listen, brand, right? There's reasons that creators, influencers are, and some of the greatest creators and influencers are bigger than brands, because they do a better job of telling stories, because they're not typically trying to hawk product, because they're focused on creating content, right? I look at Casey Neistat, right? I'm dating myself here, but, like, he was, you know, the first creator from my mind that really lent into storytelling as a product, and really didn't lean into the merchandising that these new world of creators and influencers have done an amazing job at doing. You know, so he was really, really effective at a non-commercial driven message.
I don't know anything about him.
Goodness, that's fine.
What was
Casey Neistat was a YouTuber based in New York. He was one of the bigger US-based YouTubers, has crazy Ray-Ban glasses. He was just a videographer. I don't think he graduated high school, let alone college. And he partnered with Samsung. And I always use their case study as a, you know, prime example of what influencer marketing should be, where he had a relationship with Samsung over the course of, I think, 3 or 4 years, you know, and created a series of pieces of content and commercials for them, you know, to a crescendo of, I think it was Grammys. He did it in 2017. He did a Grammys ad that was all about creators. And, you know, if you look at the ad now, it's the Samsung Casey Neistat Grammy ad. Man, they were so ahead of their time, because it was all about creators who are here to create, not brands. And Samsung gives you the tools to create your story.
I'm not sure about the timing, but I wonder how influential that was on Apple's big, like, shot on an iPhone.
I'm sure it's pretty similar. Samsung was first.
For sure. It sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very cool. And then my last question for you, we powered right through them, but what are some of the most unexpected places where you find inspiration?
Oh, I love this question, because I like that's natural curiosity. I think it's the most important characteristic to my success. I certainly look at it in others as well. Obviously, there's a balance between focus and curiosity as well. You know, I find content in TikTok fascinating to me, for a number of reasons, but also just how creative people get with their storytelling. I think it's just, you know, it's fantastic. Everything from, you know, psychologists that I follow on there that creates, like, overwhelmingly supportive and positive, you know, pieces that are fabulously lit and just very moody. And he's Seattle based. I can't remember his name now. You know, all the way through to, you know, the pre-rolls that I get served on YouTube, for example. you know, I always tell the story in presentations or in conferences where, you know, I get so excited if a pre-roll catches my attention, because I know how difficult it is, right? Because whenever you're on YouTube and you see an ad, no one is like, ooh, an ad, yay, right? And that's my job, so that's a little tough. But also, like, when you go through that process and you don't click skip, that is the ultimate success on another, like, across the board in marketing and advertising, right? So I always really overanalyze, like, why, what was it so great? You know, the New York Times, you know, Truth campaign did such a great job of doing that on YouTube. And there's a whole bunch, trying to think of others. But yeah, so I take inspiration from weird places. It's not like I go out and seek it out. Podcasts are a wonderful, weird place to get inspiration. I listen to a lot of, like, business and financial based podcasts, nothing specifically to do with creativity, you know, but everything from, you know, a highly successful, you know, billion-dollar valuated beauty brand where the entire executive leadership has zero background from beauty, right? Yeah. You know, it's oddity. They have Il Makiage and a handful of other brands underneath them. You know,
oh, I didn't know that about them. That's very cool.
Yeah. So that's, like, super, that's the sort of stuff that I'm like, see, you know, not that that gives me hope, but it's just gives me, you know, interesting places to start my story and figure out, you know, how things happen, how the world works, all that sort of stuff.
Business and finance podcasts are definitely an unexpected place to get creative.
I agree. If anyone, I can highly recommend Group Chat, a Robinhood owned podcast, which is called Snacks Daily. It's a 15-minute podcast.
I've done that one. That one's good.
Yeah, right. And it's much more. I mean, you want storytelling, like, they take numbers and turn it into a story. And again, it takes me outside of my category experience that I deal with on a day-to-day basis that I am so focused on. And I really try and take those sort of experiences and those learnings and apply them wherever I can.
Oh, I love it. I've definitely been trying to level up my financial knowledge. So the helpful finance podcasts are always welcome. And that's a great one.
Yes. Let's not go down the Web3 NFT tunnel, please.
Not today.
Yes.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.